You have deep fried those potatoes.
No, these one haven't been deep fried.
They are wrinkled, dehydrated, and they have been in the deep fat fryer.
That's not dehydrated.
You're talking to a chef.
Yes.
And for as long as I've got a hole in my butt, big boy, those f***ing potatoes have been in the deep fat fryer. Don't f***ing lie.
Hey, what's going on? Look who's back. Oh, man. I don't even remember the last show I did. How long ago was it? Well, anyway, I'm back. If you didn't know, the reason I was gone, I released three 30-minute video shorts on the website that documented my experience at the Great American Beer Festival. So if you're interested and you haven't seen them, you can see them at zeroface.wordpress.com. That is the blog address. That's where everything is. That was a lot of fun. Thanks to everybody who did see them and commented on them. I would tell you, it is about as fun as you would imagine an event like the Great American Beer Festival would be. It simply was unbelievable. And I want to have a special shout-out to my buddy Greg at the Pump House in Ohio and to Rick and Dick from BigFoamyHead.com, who also released a podcast recently from a food and beer pairing dinner that they attended the night before the GABF got started. That was an outstanding episode because what they did was they had this dinner that they sat down and they paired all this exquisite food, fantastic food, with all these great Belgian beers that were brewed by all the brewers there. And then afterward, they interviewed Rob Todd, who's the head brewer for Allagash in Maine, as well as Sam Caligioni from Dogfish Head in Delaware. Both top-notch brewers, fantastic guys. They brew great beer. I respect them quite a bit. And I respect the guys at Big Foamy Head even more because of the interviews that they did. They were just really excellent professional interviews and really great insight into craft beer. More than anything, it really, you know, it lets you know and give you a little bit of insight as to what they're thinking and how they feel about beer. So I would highly suggest you check it out. But you know, enough about beer. Let's talk about beer. No, seriously, let's talk about food, okay? This is the sausage party, so to speak. I said when I started this thing that at some point I would talk about making sausage. So that's what we're going to do today. We're going to make sausage. And I'm going to go through the entire process with you and show you how it's done and what it takes to make sausage. And if you don't want to make sausage, that's fine. But you can always kind of learn the process. And if you want, you can make sausage with pre-ground pork and just make patties, okay? I'm going the full route, but you don't have to. The ingredient list is very, very simple. You'll just see how simple it is to actually make sausage. The other thing is, I'm not sure if you guys have been following The Next Iron Chef on Food TV. They just had the final, so I don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it yet. But for as much as I touted it, the first couple of episodes were really not that great. It got better, and then the two remaining final cooks were exactly who my wife and I thought would be there. So it was kind of an in-house chef-off for the two of us. I don't want to say anything more for those of you who haven't seen it. I'm not into spoilers, so I'm not going to spoil it for you, but I would highly suggest you check it out. If nothing else, see the final, because it's pretty cool. Also, Ratatouille is out on DVD now. So if you didn't get a chance to see that while it was in the theater, check it out on DVD. There's great special features, including a special interview with Thomas Keller from The French Laundry. I did say enough about beer, but I do need to drink something on the show because, you know, it wouldn't be my life as a foodie if I didn't drink something and end the show face down drunk. So I'm going to share this fine bottle of beer from our friends at shouldidrinkthat.com. Sick Puppy sent this beer to me not long ago, and I wanted to open up to you and share my experience with it and, you know, have it on the show. It's from the Brooklyn Brewery in New York, and here on the West Coast, we don't get a lot of beers from there, so this is kind of special. The beer is called Brooklyn Local One, and it's from Brooklyn Brewery, and it's a Saison farmhouse ale, which, you know, one of my favorite styles because I really like to drink Saison. Belgian beers are my favorite beers, and this one is kind of strong. It's about 9% alcohol. They say they brew it with German malts and hops, a first pressing of Demerara cane sugar from, I'm going to slaughter this one, Demerara, I'm not sure if I got that one right. It's from Mauritius. Maybe I did say that right. And a Belgian yeast strain. 100% bottle fermented, and it's classified as a strong saison by Garrett Oliver, who I met briefly at the Great American Beer Festival, and I'm going to leave it at that.
Okay, I got the bottle here, and we're going to open it up. It's got the cork in it. It's, you know, it's in a big, tall bomber bottle. Yeah, nice. Got a little foamy head on there. We're going to pour it into a nice goblet glass. Listen, man, if you're drinking good beer, respect it, will you? Pour it into a nice glass. Pour it into a wine glass if you have them. There's a reason why wine's poured in a wine glass. You want to know why? You see the angle of the wine glass? It angles it toward your nose. You know why they do that? So the aroma of the wine gets you first, so you can smell it properly. These pint glasses are fine if you're drinking tea or if you want to swill some, you know, some lager in the summer to keep yourself cool down. Fine, that's okay. But if you really want to taste a beer and smell it and really appreciate it, get a glass that angles it toward your nose. The top of it should angle in toward the nose. So that's what I poured this in. Billy, we had a little cloudy. Could be from the chill because it was in the fridge. Nice fruity. It's got good flavors. Banana, a little pear, pineapple. Ooh, this is starting to sound a little gay. You know, I don't want that. It's beautiful. It's like a classic Saison. It smells great. I'm not going to smell it all day. I'm going to drink it now. Wow. Very, very smooth. A little bit of clove, which is kind of something you would get from this beer. And on the back end, I'm definitely tasting some phenols, maybe a little bit of phenolic taste. You know what phenols are? You ever smell Band-Aids or some liquid smoke? That's what phenols smell like. If they're really too strong, then and it overpowers the beer, that's not good. But just to have a little bit of that, a tiny hint of it, that's great, especially with a style like this because, you know, it's part of the character of the beer. It's supposed to be there, and it comes from the yeast. But if you're tasting that like a brown ale or a lager, and it's really not supposed to be there, and you're probably drinking an infected beer, but fuck it, drink it anyway. I don't think there's any infection in this beer. It's just really, it's nice. It's perfect. It's right there. So thank you to shouldidrinkthat.com. Local one from Brooklyn Brewery. I'll put a link on the website. It's great. I love this. Sorry to beer out, but you know, it's just what I do. Okay, so I wanted to tell you about this movie, King Korn. Have you heard about this? In a way, it kind of ties into the last show that I did on the Midwest being food hell. Because remember, I was talking about how I went there and I expected to see all this agriculture, and all I saw, they were growing a shitload of corn, but it was all for the wrong reasons. And it's true that they grow this corn for ethanol, and they also grow it to make high fructose corn syrup, which is in pretty much everything you eat if you shop the inside aisles of the supermarket, which I've told you people to stop doing. Damn it. Stop it. Shop the outside aisles. The inside aisles full of high fructose corn syrup. Very bad for you. King Korn is a documentary about two friends who buy an acre of corn and the subsidized crop that drives our fast food nation. In King Korn, Ian Chaney and Kurt Ellis, who are best friends from college on the East Coast, move to the heartland, which is where I spent the last, you know, the few days earlier this fall in the Food Hell episode, to learn where food comes from. With the help of friendly neighbors, genetically modified seeds, nitrogen fertilizers, and powerful herbicides, they plant and grow a bumper crop of America's most productive, most subsidized grain in 1 acre of Iowa soil. But when they try to follow their pile of corn into the food system, what they find raises troubling questions about how we eat and how we farm. As it turns out, we grow a single strain of corn that they call urban corn. That's what they refer to it as, urban corn. And it's not really worth the money that it takes to grow it because you can't eat it, all right? So it's not for eating. That should kind of be your first clue. They try to get into a high fructose corn syrup factory, I guess, and they're not allowed in there. So what they do is they try to make their own. And I'm not sure how that turns out because I haven't seen the movie, but something tells me it's probably a giant debacle, or as we like to call it, a clusterfuck. But the truth of the matter is that we're growing a shitload of corn that we can't consume until it's turned into food, which is kind of stupid if you think about it, all right? And the food that it's turned into is really bad for us, and it's going to make us sick and kill us. The timing of the release of this movie really couldn't be any more perfect either, which is great. The 2007 Farm Bill is looming on the Senate Agricultural Committee's agenda this month. And in fact, I think it actually happened. It may have happened already. I'm not sure. But King Korn had gone in October. They went back there to Washington, D.C., and they previewed the movie. I think just like, you know, a week or two before the Farm Bill actually went in. If you don't know what the Farm Bill is, I'll explain it. I did a little research on this, so bear with me on this. Every 4 to 7 years, Congress reauthorizes a variety of farm and food laws through a multi-year Farm Bill. So each bill is given a formal name, such as the Food and Agricultural Act of 2007 or the Food, Agriculture, Conservation, and Trade Act of 2007. But more often, people just kind of refer to each act simply as the Farm Bill. Even though they have their own names, they just call it the Farm Bill. So food assistance, conservation, agricultural trade, credit, rural development, research, and other farm, food, and rural policies are actually governed by a variety of separate laws, which can be and usually are renewed or modified as standalone bills. But Congress finds it to their advantage to combine all these bills into a single large-scale reauthorization at the same time that they renew the farm commodity programs. So what they think is that this approach kind of has the advantage of providing a more comprehensive look at food, agricultural, and rural policy, and it increases support for all these things. You know, with any hope, the screenings that they did in Washington went well. I don't know if they did or not. And it hopefully it influenced the people that were responsible for authorizing these bills. Like I said, I haven't seen the film yet, so I can't really comment on the movie directly. But the reviews have all been just absolutely great. Of course, it did get a nasty critique from a corn lobbyist group, the National Corn Growers Association. I didn't even know that existed, but I'm sure, you know, there's a ton like that. Anyway, they claimed that what the directors of the film were doing was trying to shake up the debate about this year's new Farm Bill. They said the film was an attempt to influence the legislation. Well, duh. No shit, Sherlock. That's the point, right? That's the reason why documentaries are made. You know, Michael Moore made Sicko about national health care, okay? It just so happened, it was coincidental that that happened to be Hillary Clinton's platform for running for the Democratic ticket. You know, Morgan Spurlock did that Super Size Me movie, and people criticized that it was unrealistic. But it, you know, it did shake things up a bit. So yeah, these things come out for a reason. You know, they come out to make a point. And it's not just about getting an Oscar nod. Of course, you know, gee, an Oscar nod would be nice for these guys. But I think it's more about making a positive impact on our food. And I think that's where it directly relates to us as foodies and what we do and what we're about, which is eating good food all the time and making sure that we still have that good food. And I'll tell you what, this corn thing, it hits home a little bit harder, especially for me and people like me and hopefully people like you who enjoy beer, because we're you know, going through a hop shortage. We're about to see an incredible hop shortage in this country, and we're seeing it already. It's just we haven't seen the effects of it yet. These guys who have been these farmers who own all this land have been growing hops for years. They're not seeing a really good return on their investment. So what they've done is they've sold the property or they've taken all the hops out and they've started to grow corn because they get a bigger return and there's more to be made. So you can grow more corn than you can hops, I guess. And, you know, corn's worth more. So anyway, check it out if you get the chance, okay? It if it hits theaters here, and it will more likely be an art house theater if it does, and those are starting to dwindle too, I'll check it out, give my review. Otherwise, I'll catch it on DVD, and I'll let you know what's coming out. But it does sound like a winner. I watched an episode of Bobby Flay's Boy Meets Grill last week. He was making a classic brasserie-style lunch with just a ton of seafood. You know what? And I like watching the show sometimes. I don't watch it all the time. I'll TiVo it every once in a while, only if he's like cooking something really interesting to me. And the things that I like seafood and stuff, you know, when he does those special things. But, you know, ordinarily I won't watch a show, but this was kind of cool. Anyway, so he's running down what he's going to cook up, right? He's going to cook all sorts of clams and mussels and crabs, lobsters and big prawns and stuff. And he gets to these crab claws from Florida. They're Florida stone crabs. And I found this bit really funny. I'm going to play it for you. And it, in an odd way, I found it funny because I'm just a weird bastard. But listen.
And then we have a couple of different kinds of shrimp here. We have head-on prawns. And then one of my favorite ingredients, Florida stone crabs. If you can find these, buy them. They are just absolutely fantastic. And the great thing about stone crabs is that when they're harvesting them, they actually just rip the claws off and then they throw them back and they regenerate. So, you know, this could be like the 12th claw from this guy.
Okay, so that sounds horrible, right? I mean, he makes it sound like they catch these things and they just rip their claws off and throw them back in the water. And it's great because they grow back so we can just rip their claws off again.
And listen, before I go further with this, I don't have any problem with this, all right? They're delicious. It's not our fault they're delicious. If you taste that damn good, I'm going to eat your ass, all right? I don't care. But that needed just a little bit more explanation. To carnivores and eaters like us, hey, it's no problem, all right? But this is where those PETA assholes are just going to tear into us for being cruel to animals. And if you just listen to that with no other explanation, it sounds like a pretty shitty deal for the crab. And it is, for the most part, you know. Give us those tasty claws, I'm going to rip your arms off, all right? And then I'm going to throw you back in the water and, well, shit, fend for yourself. I hope you don't die because next year I'd like to catch you again and eat the new pair that you grew. But the truth is, and thank God for Wikipedia, the Florida stone crab loses its limbs easily to escape from predators or tight spaces, but their limbs grow back really quick. So whenever a claw is broken in the right place, of course, the wound will quickly heal itself and it doesn't lose a lot of blood. But if the claw is broken in the wrong spot, then it loses a lot more blood, and then the chances of survival for the crab are really low. So it only takes about a year for the claw to grow back to its normal size. So every time the crab molts, a new claw grows larger and larger. So that's fine if you're, you know, in the know and you know about these crabs. But without any explanation, that sounded a little rough, you know? I mean, here's the deal. I own cats, all right? And they're declawed, so they don't fuck up my furniture. And because they're declawed, I won't let them outside because I know that it can get a little dangerous for a cat out there. They can't defend itself without claws. But, on the other hand, I have no issue with these crabs getting their claws ripped off and then thrown back in the water with no way to protect themselves. So, you know, I'll admit that I have a double standard. There's definitely a double standard with me, and not just on this. All right? I totally have a double standard. I eat animals. End of story. All right? I just don't... I wonder why they don't eat the whole damn thing. You know, it has to kind of suck to roam around in the ocean with no way to defend yourself. Okay, it grows back, but still, it's fucked up. You don't have any hands, you know? You know, I just don't want to come back as a Florida stone crab. You know, I'll come back as a bull shark or something tough. I just think that sucks, man. I hope I still have listeners, man. I took like 4 weeks off to do that video thing. I mean, it's been a month since I released a show. And I couldn't put these things up on iTunes either. That kind of sucks. Well, you know what? Let's get down to it, man. We're going to make sausage, all right? I know that I mentioned really early on about making Italian sausage. And I said that we might discuss that on the show. Today, I figured I'd just go ahead and do it. Making sausage can either be really simple or really complicated. It can be as hard as you want it to be. But it really is delicious, and it's definitely worth your time, no matter how much time you want to put into it. Basically, it's ground meat, okay, with seasonings and spices. You allow that to marinate and cure, then you cook it and enjoy it. It's very simple. Very simple process. But the process of actually making sausage from scratch is really kind of time-consuming, and it takes a bit of care and a moderate amount of skill. And that's only because, you know, in most cases, you're working with hog casings. You know, grinding the meat takes time, and threading the hydrated casings onto the sausage stuffer, that takes time, and then you got to clean it up. I mean, there's a lot of time involved. This all takes time. Cooking takes time. And this is kind of a point I wanted to make early on anyway, because I get this a lot. People say to me, they go, wow, you have too much time on your hands, or, you know, how do you have all the time for this? You know, I make time for it because it's what I care about. It's what I do. It's a hobby. I mean, I'm really passionate about it. And if you care about something, you're going to spend some time on it. It just so happens this is the thing I spend a lot of time on. You know, I don't have kids. I'm not at soccer practice. I have a job, and I do that job. But when it's over, when my day's over, I'm doing the things that I love to do. And one of the things that I really love to do happens to be in the kitchen. Or, you know, I'm crafting new things. It's craftsmanship as far as I see. It's kind of like an art form. And I love to build food, and I love to experiment with flavor. And generally, I just like to make the people that I love feel more loved. And food just kind of helps me do that, you know? It's that simple. Anyway, I've posted all the necessary information and the recipe on the website. So if you want, download the PDF. And don't forget to look at the slideshow, too, because I have pictures there that you can kind of use as a guide or follow along with it. And listen, if this sounds like too much work to you, please, just don't do it, all right? I just kind of wanted to explain how it's done. And trust me, it's not about saving money. If you think it is, it's not. It certainly is about saving money or time. You can, by the time I'm done here, you could drive to the grocery store or the Italian deli. You can pick up a few pounds of Italian sausage for $1 or $2, you know, a pound. And it's far cheaper, it's faster, it's easier than what I'm about to explain to you. but this is kind of about making your own. So here's what's the deal. Here's basically the recipe. 3 to 5 pounds of lean ground pork butt or shoulder, 3 large garlic cloves, a teaspoon of fresh basil, a teaspoon of fresh oregano, a teaspoon of fresh parsley that's minced up, and a teaspoon of red hot chili flakes, or a peppercini, as they say in Italian. 2 more tablespoons of fennel salad. Again, you can like really pile this stuff on. I mean, you can put 4 if you want, 5. I mean, you want a lot of fennel, put a lot of fennel in. Trust me, if you want an Italian, you know, load it up. 1/2 cup of dry white wine, 1 1/2 tablespoons of sea salt to begin with, 2 teaspoons of freshly ground black pepper, 2 tablespoons of Italian flat leaf parsley, that you chop up and don't put stems in because that's kind of nasty. And then hog casings, which you can buy salt-packed or water-packed. I happen to buy mine salt-packed, so I can use them you know, as I need. What you'll need before you begin is either pre-ground pork or, if you want to do it all from scratch, a decent meat grinder. Now, if you're insane, you can buy a hand grinder, hook it up to the counter with a vise, and then hand grind that meat until your arm falls off. And believe me, You'll wish it did before you're finished, because that sucks. I'm fortunate enough to have a very loving friend who found it in her heart to give my wife and I a KitchenAid stand mixer for a Christmas gift. And it was single-handedly the nicest gift she could have given us. Of course, you know, she's thinking, hey, you know, you need this, you can start baking. I'm thinking, fuck that, man. I'm getting a meat grinder attachment. I'm going to make sausage. No animals safe, hide your pets, man. So ever since then, I've had sausage on the brain, and I've been making sausage for pretty much close to a year now. So after the meat grinder, you'll need a tube to stuff the sausage casings with. Usually these hook right up to the grinder as an attachment. All the stuff that I bought was made for the KitchenAid mixer, and I got the grinder and the sausage stuffer for about $100. I got it on Amazon. You get a good deal on Amazon. If you want to make links, you'll need to buy the hog casings. I get them at the Italian deli. Now, if you can't find those, you can ask the butcher, your local butcher, if he knows where you can get them. He can pretty much hook you up. But the casings that I get are packed in salt, and they're in a Ziploc package. I usually make anywhere from 5 to 10 pounds at a time, so I'll pull out however many I think I'm going to need and then put the rest back in the package and keep it in the fridge so it stays good. And it doesn't cost you a lot of money to buy these casings. It's like $5. So anyway, if you don't want to make links and just make the sausage, you're fine. You don't have to buy the sausage casings or the stuffer. Most importantly, you're going to need a pork shoulder or a butt. Get one with a lot of fat on it if you can. If you use meat that's too lean, you're going to end up making sawdust. The first batch that I made was really lean. And I thought I was being healthy, right? You know, because I didn't want a lot of fat in it. But I ended up with some of the driest sausage I've ever tasted. So now if I get a shoulder that looks like it's too lean, it's had, you know, too much fat trimmed off of it, I'll pick up an extra pound of pork fat. Or if you want to do, you can also add olive oil to the meat if it's too lean. And olive oil actually helps and acts as a lubricant and provides a little extra flavor. So if you can't get pork fat, or if you want to just get lean meat and add a little olive oil, it's a little healthier. And the process is very simple. You start with the pork shoulder or the butt, cut it into small chunks, season it with salt, pepper, the herbs, fennel, garlic, hot pepper, all the other spices, and then allow it to cure and marinate for a few days in your refrigerator. You just keep it in a Ziploc bag, keep the air out of it, and just let it sit there and cure for a couple days. You know, the key here is that you're making an Italian sausage, all right? So you're not going to be able to overdo it on fennel or garlic. You could certainly overdo it on garlic, but for the most part, if you know, you go by the recipe, you want to add a little bit extra, you can. It's not a problem. Seriously, pour it on. And also, like I said before, with fennel, you seriously can't overdo it. I mean, if you add an extra tablespoon, it's not going to screw anything up. And if you're making hot sausage, especially, if you really want it spicy, you want to add a lot of red pepper flakes. And trust me, I mean, you're dealing with 5 pounds of meat, or 3 pounds even. I mean, you're going to need a lot of pepper to make it spicy. So there's a lot of room for interpretation here. You can really go crazy. It's not a problem. Dive in. On the day when you're ready to grind it up and start stuffing the sausages after it's cured, you want to rehydrate the hog casings if you bought the ones that are packed in salt. If they're packed in water, you're fine. But they usually come packed in salt. So take out what you think you're going to need. Give them a bath in cold water. Rinse off all the salt. Then give another rinsing to make sure that all that salt is off. Then basically what you want to do is give the casings 3 successive soakings in hot water, as hot as you can get out of your tap. Fill the bowl with really hot water from the tap. Let it sit. 30 minutes later, drain it. Fill it again with hot water. Drain that after 30 minutes. Fill it again with hot water. What this does is it kind of helps hydrate the skin so they're pliable enough to fit over the sausage stuffer tube. And if this sounds like a lot of work, screw it, make sausage patties, all right? Because it is a lot of work. While the skins are soaking, you can grind your meat. Follow the instructions on the grinder, okay? Because they've got it down. So whatever they say to do, do it. Grind it all up, collect it in a bowl. And before you stuff it, take a small ball of the sausage and cook it up. This is really important because if you start stuffing sausage links with meat that isn't seasoned enough or doesn't have enough fennel or it's not hot enough for your taste, you're going to be very sad because you're going to have a ton of sausage links that aren't right or aren't what you wanted. So cook a little bit of it up. It may need a little adjusting, and you can always do that before you stuff it. So cook up a small taste, give it a try. If it needs more fennel, add some more fennel. You know, if it needs more salt, you can add more salt. That's why I say don't oversalt it. If you oversalt in the beginning, you're done. But if you undersalt, you can always add more. If it's not hot enough, pour in more pepper flakes and mix it up. Try it again. Don't stuff it until you know exactly how it tastes and it's exactly what you want. Seriously, once you taste how good it is, you'll be so charged up to stuff these sausages, you're going to be ready to do the next task. So after the casings are ready and the meat's ready to go, you want to thread one of the casings over the sausage stuffer tube and continue threading it on like a, I hate to say it, I don't want to be gross, but like a big condom, all right? It's like a giant condom that you're just going to thread on. When you get to the end, leave enough hanging off the tube that allows you to tie it into a knot. This is the end of the link, all right? And you can start feeding the ground meat into the sausage stuffer and make your sausage. You fill it until the link is about 6 to 8 inches long, longer if you want it really Italian, if you follow me, and then give it a few twists. That's a link. Fill it again. Repeat the process. When you get to the end of the hog casing, stop at about 5 inches short of the end. Pull it off the sausage tube and then tie that off. Now you've got a complete link of sausage, and then repeat the process. That's pretty much how you make sausage. It's really best enjoyed grilled with red peppers and onions and a couple tablespoons of marinara sauce poured over that, and that is how you eat Italian sausage. You can boil it if you want. You can do it anything. You can put it in the microwave. I don't care. But if you want to eat like an Italian, you grill it with red peppers, a little bit of onion, and a couple tablespoons of marinara sauce. It's beautiful. So one last drink of this beer. Again, a special thanks to shouldidrinkthat.com, Sick Puppy, for sending this beer to us. That was just delicious. Really helped me do the show. I'm glad to finally be back on the audio saddle. Hope you're all still with me. Sorry about the video. If it's any consolation, go check them out, zeroface.wordpress.com. Don't forget about the slideshow, all right, and download the recipe for the sausages if you want to make them. And I want to thank all the new listeners that we're getting from the Beer Report's confrontation board at thebeerreport.com. And again, a huge shout-out to all my other podcasting friends for helping me spread the word about this show, bigfoamyhead.com, and our friends over at Brain Gravy. I have a lot planned in the next couple months. One of the things that I'm going to be doing is Korean food, and that might even be next show. Korean food, we need to do Mexican food, and we're going to do a little extreme eating. We're going to enter the Asian market. I'm going to walk to the meat counter. We're going to purchase some pork uterus. We're going to take it home, season it, cook it, and eat it. And I know what they say. It may taste wrong, but I hear it makes you strong. All right? Either that or make my breath strong. Anyway, more to come. Stay tuned. Thanks again for tuning in. Thanks for hanging out with me. See you guys next time on My Life as a Foodie.